This is Dream City, a podcast series from Feet in Two Worlds. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez. In the past few years, a growing number of undocumented youth brought to the United States as kids, often called dreamers, have become immigration activists. In this episode, Shiva Bayat introduces us to Esther, who in many ways embodies this immigrant experience. For one, she came out publicly. But what's typical about Esther's story stops right there. And instead, she takes us to some unexpected places. Shiva picks up the story from here.
At some point, we have all judged people, or been judged, based on appearances. Being misidentified can be annoying. Sometimes it hurts. In some cases, though, it can work to your advantage. But even when that happens, when being misjudged works in your favor, it's not that simple. In fact, it can get really complicated, as my friend Esther discovered.
I didn't find out I was undocumented until I was about 15. I wanted a job. You know, my parents weren't in a financial situation where they could really give me an allowance. And I really wanted to be able to go to the movies and go out to eat and things like that with my friends. And so I needed a job. So I told my parents that, and that's when they told me that it was probably going to be difficult for me to get hired, and I threw a fit. I was really angry. I didn't understand. What do you mean, like, we don't have papers? At that time, like, I didn't really understand what it meant to be undocumented. I mean, I wasn't even using the word undocumented, you know, it was, you know, we're illegal, or we don't have papers.
With help from her parents, Esther forged documents to be able to work.
We all had social security cards, because you can just apply for one, but they were stamped with not valid for work. And so they basically helped me edit my paperwork so that I could apply for a job.
I met Esther 2 years ago. It was at a screening of a documentary about undocumented people in the US. I was intrigued by her story, her work as a writer and her looks, including all her tattoos. I immediately wanted to be friends with Esther. At 27 years old, she had only been out as undocumented for a few months.
Probably the most influential for me in college, and actually what kind of moved me to come out eventually, was Gloria Anzaldúa. That was like the first time that I kind of saw my experience in a book, in media, really. Gloria, like, actually talked about feeling in this in-between space, and she had words for it, you know, and so I really connected with her, and I just remember, like, just feeling so much, like, while we were reading it in class, and just, like, wanting to just, like, stand up and scream, like, this is me!
Esther managed to live under the radar as an undocumented person for more than half her life. But it was the passage of DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Child Arrivals, that was instrumental in Esther coming out. DACA is an immigration policy that allows renewable work permits to certain undocumented immigrants. They had to have entered the country before their 16th birthday and before June 2007. Having DACA is also an exemption from deportation. So after receiving DACA, Esther felt like a huge weight had been lifted off her shoulders and decided to come out as undocumented publicly, sort of.
And I actually just wrote a blog post. No one ever checked my blog. It wasn't anything that, like, people were clicking into, but it was the only thing that I had available to me other than social media. I had my boyfriend take a photo of me with the hashtag undocumented and unafraid. I was just exposing myself to my friends.
What is different about Esther came out too? Friends responded to her post with questions like,
but you're white. How can you be undocumented?
Esther's parents are from Spain, and they're Mormons. They had come to Utah to be closer to their church, known officially as the Church of Latter-day Saints, or LDS. And they thought the move would help their marriage.
My mom, growing up, was kind of obsessed with America and American culture, and just had these very romanticized ideas of America. My mom met American missionaries from the Mormon Church in Spain when she was 15 years old, and she was actually the first convert in her city. And my dad's dream was to work for the church, and I think that they were just young, and they thought that you could just move anywhere that you want to in the world and just work. But that's not how that works, so... And then once you oversee your visa, it's too late.
Because they blended into white society, Esther and her family were able to live a relatively normal life in Utah. They didn't quite develop the same fears that most undocumented immigrants have. For example, Esther's mom was working at a hospital when she met someone who could have potentially put the whole family in danger.
So she had built this relationship with an ICE agent just because she'd come and translate. And she felt brave enough at one point to come out to him and ask him, what should I do about my situation?
Her mom had heard some very wrong information about how it might be possible to get a green card if the whole family went into deportation proceedings.
So she actually asked this ICE agent to put us in deportation proceedings. I think that just speaks to our privilege, because if anyone else had done that, I mean, that's just insane.
But Esther did experience moments of pure fear.
I had a boyfriend who I'd come out to who actually ended up telling all of his friends when I broke up with him that I was undocumented. And every time that they'd see me on the street, they would come up to me and call me a spick and an alien. And he threatened to get me fired from my job. And I couldn't come out to my job, so I had to make up a reason why they needed to ban him from the library. I was working at the library at the time. Before DACA, I'd actually been scared to do any research on immigration, to even put it in Google. I'd even been scared to go to protests and things. I didn't want to show up as an immigrant anywhere.
It was Dream Summer, an internship for undocumented youth that helped to embolden Esther. From there, she threw herself into the immigrant rights movement.
Being in the room with all of these immigrant youth, telling their stories, building a relationship with them, building friendships with them, finding ways that we could support each other was amazing. I felt more empowered. I felt more connected and inspired. More accountable, really, to the direction that I wanted to go. So seeing these people who had a whole lot more to lose than I did was really empowering, and also made me feel really guilty because I didn't have as much to lose and I wasn't brave enough to come out.
Were you the only Caucasian person there?
There were some light-skinned Latinos. But yeah, I was probably the only person who would identify as white. There was some discomfort with that, and also coming to terms with my privilege even inside the movement as an undocumented immigrant. But they didn't treat me any differently. They still validated my experiences, and we still had a lot of the same experiences. And I felt like I was gently educated, compassionately educated on my privilege, and that it didn't make me feel, too different from everyone else.
Many things in her life changed as she embraced a new activist lifestyle.
I quit this job that I'd had for a really long time that was a huge part of my identity, it was everything, really. I moved from Salt Lake City to New York City. And that was a big disruption. I mean, I kind of lost myself in coming out and changing so much.
In what way?
I lost my voice in my writing. I didn't know how to write anymore, be authentic to myself. I was basically trying to find different ways to exploit myself and my story. How can I use this new identity now to get published? Or to further my creative career. And it felt really disingenuous. I lost my sense of humor, where before I hadn't really had to think about a lot of these issues.
As Esther got to know more Dreamers and immigrant organizations, she began to doubt her place in the movement or how she could be useful to it.
I thought that telling my story was going to be empowering, and it was at first. And when I had like a big group of other immigrant youth around me, yeah, it was really empowering. But like on my own in New York City, trying to figure out what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be, it felt the opposite. Because everybody has a unique situation as an immigrant, but mine was unique in that, well, that I'm white and have that privilege, and that I'm European and have that privilege, and also that I have DACA. Like, I really don't represent the people who need immigration reform the most, especially now that I have married a citizen.
Being able to get a legal residency permit through marriage has changed Esther's identity yet again. It's opened up new possibilities for her life, some immediate and tangible.
The biggest change in my life is that I will be able to leave the country. I'm already making plans to go to Spain. I haven't been there since I was 11.
As a white woman who now has legal immigration status, Esther can now lead a normal life if she chooses to. But she's decided to dedicate almost all her free time to the immigrant rights movement.
Like, I'm volunteering for this organization called WARMI, and they needed somebody who could take photos of them and make like a film about the organization and the work that they're doing and design their logo and do some of the creative marketing. So I'm thinking about different ways that I can support rather than be front and center. I mean, I might have some talent as an artist, but I know that I have skills as an editor and promoter because of my experiences and the resume that I have. I can help people lift up their work and be a generous editor.
At this point, Esther could choose to walk away from a movement tied to an identity she no longer holds. But her decision to remain involved and contribute speaks to how some experiences mark us for life. Regardless of how others see us, it is our own sense of identity that ultimately determines how we move through the world. For Feet in Two Worlds, this is Shiva Bayat.
This is Dream City, a podcast series from Feet in Two Worlds. I'm Jocelyn Gonzalez, producer of the series, and our editor is Carolina Gonzalez. John Rudolph is the executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds. Special thanks to Rachel Bongiorno. The music in this episode is by Lee Rosevere, Ketsa, Indian Wells, and Rui. Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. Our supporters include the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Nicholas B. Ottaway Foundation, and listeners like you. Feet in Two Worlds is a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Visit our website at fi2w.org.